BBC Six Music Podcasts. Six Music. This is a free download from the BBC. Find out more at bbc.co.uk/sixmusic. And now, Adam and Joe.
Adam, Adam, Joe. Adam, Adam,
Joe, 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 Joe.
Adam, Adam,
Joe.
Adam, Adam,
Joe, 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 Joe.
Adam, Adam,
Joe.
Adam, Adam,
Joe, 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 Joe.
Adam, Adam,
Joe, 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 Joe,
Adam, 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 Adam,
Adam, Adam, Adam, Adam, Adam, Adam,
he did the best academically at school.
You are no longer Saint Joe.
Is the wicked one. Look at him go.
You did not do the best academically at school. What's that?
I'd like to take you to bed.
You're only allowed to say your name.
One. Joe is an incredible dude.
Now, you see, this is exactly the thing that made this whole sung introduction a problem. It's you being a little bit juvenile about it and turning it into a kind of silly school.
Who's the best in the whole world? Oh my God,
stop it!
Seen him with my eyes.
Stop it!
What a song. Do you know they're bringing the Wombles back where they're going to call them the Jombles?
The Jombles.
Did you know that?
Yes, everyone knows that.
You read it
that.
In the paper. Everybody knows because they published it in the paper.
We thought we'd bring it back this week. A little song introduction. Now it's turned into this vast pool of acrimony. Hey, speaking of acrimony, though, Evis has got his knickers in a twist about the Wongles.
It's a very...
Glasto. I mean, yeah, what's
the difference? Song introduction.
How is the Wongles any different from Rolf Harris?
It's hard to tell these days when there's a scandal, whether it's genuine or whether it's trumped up.
Trumped up.
Because maybe the Wombles like this. They've got more publicity than they have for years. Yes.
Is it the original lineup of the Wombles? Is Mike Batt in there? Is he still alive
yeah.
even?
Yeah.
So Batt's in one of the suits.
No, Batt's definitely still going strong. He's a very talented man. Is he in one of the suits? We don't know.
Don't know.
We don't know.
But glad to hear it. I mean, you know, they should have the Wombats and then the Wombles and then...
Womad. At Womad.
and then some Women.
Yeah.
And then the Moomins.
Some Woomen watching Moomin. Yeah. Hey, welcome to the podcast.
Yes.
This is Adam and Joe, BBC Six Music. Thanks for downloading it.
Yeah.
All sorts of fun coming up. Some of it possibly in this podcast.
I mean, wow. How was your brain this morning?
It was shaky at the beginning. I had very little sleep last night or the night before.
Oh, really? What were you doing?
Things. Work things, actually.
Worshipping Satan.
Worshipping. Worshipping Satan.
Yeah, yeah.
Till late at night. And, so I was a little bit rusticles.
Right.
Barney Rusticles.
Yeah, I had a little bit of bowl of rusticles as well.
Yeah, but I thought we made it through. There were some fun times. Some chortles and some chuckles.
There were.
You be the judge of that, though, listeners. We hereby present what we done this morning.
And we'll be back halfway through for a small slice of Wiffles. And I can't tell you what flavour Wiffles they'll be. You'll just have to find out for yourself.
Midriff Wiffles.
Midriff Wiffles.
Tasty.
Tasty. Here we go!
Are you ready for the Adam and Joe podcast? Made with little nuggets from their radio show. Mildly amusing mini moments from the past. Beautifully preserved in super stereo. 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 Everybody likes it from your sister to your mother.
It's the Queen's birthday today.
Yes, it is, isn't it?
It's her official birthday. In the United Kingdom, the Queen's official birthday is now celebrated on the first, second or third Saturday in June, although it is rarely the third.
I'm kind of all, to be perfectly honest, I'm all roiled out.
What?
Well, there was the big shin-shang the other day.
Yeah, that
the
was...
The big shoe lally.
That was just...
I mean,
we
I don't mean to
going.
Torpedo your link. But anyway, go on, see whether there's any royal
Queen's
enthusiasm
birthday.
Left.
The what
Queen's
about the honours? You've got to be happy for Brucey. Sir Bruce, come on.
Well, no, it's true, because I've been waiting. I mean, I've been so furious
sure
that he hasn't been given one of them. I mean, we the public have been screaming for it.
Yeah.
And showbiz has been, I mean, it's been a national disgrace. And
Jimmy
now finally,
Starbucks was very nice and magnanimous. Her real birthday is, do you know when it is?
No.
April 21st. Why do you know when the Queen's real birthday is? Mm-hmm. That's a good answer. We had a message, though, from Mark. He says, "Hi, Dr. Buckles and Pasty Man. I think the Queen may have been moonlighting over on Radio 1. times must be hard as she's now earning money as a Brazilian drum and bass DJ called DJ Markie. Check out Annie Mack's interview from Friday's show. Here's a little clip.
So listen, tonight's special delivery is a tune from you and Spy.
Yep.
Called Yellow Shoes. Talk me through this tune, please.
My girlfriend, she's from Australia and I miss her a lot. And I just decided to make a track for her. And I just roll it out the tune and I sing in a tune, that's me singing. And I remember I sent it to Spy and he just like, oh my God, I love the tune. Let me finish. Let me put a couple other things here. And I said, okay, fine. And he just like, oh, it's a cappella. It's fantastic. Where did you find it? Just like, that's me singing.
No way. And so he's
never
heard you sing before.
And he's just like, no. And he's just like, no, kidding. I was like, no, it's me.
Rolling out of joy.
So there's a little bit of royal blood in there. A tiny bit of blue blood in there. I wouldn't say it's all the way.
It's not. No, because she's disguising her voice.
Oh, you're saying that's her?
That's the actual queen, yeah.
Oh.
She's a little queen, and he's a little queen. Normally a queen.
I don't know.
Like
I just think like in the 40s and 50s, people used to aspire to speak what was called the Queen's English. Mm-hmm. I think that's now just happening again. People are aspiring to speak the Queen's English. They have such respect for her having on this program.
So you think because DJ Markie was in town.
I think more and more people out there are just trying to speak properly.
A tune.
Here's DJ Markie's actual tune.
So this is DJ Markie singing for the first time and obviously producing Spy. The track is called Yellow Shoes. It is our special delivery.
Hold on! Special delivery coming through!
Here we go.
Laura is the queen. I've got Laura waiting, ready for a sexy night tonight. I've been going ready, steady with a lolly duke of any. If you're trying to get between us, then it's gonna be a fight.
Laura, lolly couple.
Laura,
I think it's time we wandered into the realm of Retro Text the Nation. And we're going to be talking about apologies in a second, but first, here's a new reworking of Joe's classic Retro Text the Nation jingle from Doog, a.k.a. Andy Phipps. He says, "Dearest Adam and Joe, I've recorded a nifty Retro Text the Nation jingle for you in the style of everyone's favourite weirdos from Boston, the Pixies. Please allow the extremely poor Black Francis vocal impression to pass you by without too much scorn pouring. If it helps my case, I recorded the trash and bin screams approximately a million times whilst listening to the track on headphones, so I'm pretty sure my neighbours and local community now think I'm undergoing some kind of internal transatlantic struggle. Love and hugs from South East London." Here's what Doog came up with.
I like to listen to Adam and Joe.
Wowee. Has he done the music for that himself?
I think he has.
Done the whole instrumentation and everything. Man. That is amazing.
That got better and better as it went through. And the bit, the actual bit where he's saying, "thrown in the trash and forgotten," that impression was perfect.
What's his name?
That's Andy Phipps.
Andy, that's brilliant.
And then the stuff at the end with the Kim Deal backing vocals is fantastic.
Very
that's great.
Good.
Thanks, man. So, Retro Text the Nation. Last week we were talking, the whole thing was inspired by this anecdote that I had about nearly killing a woman with a huge piece of MDF that blew over. And at the end of the conversation, I joked that Text the Nation was going to be about times when you've been hit by large pieces of MDF. So someone sent in a story about them being hit by a piece of wood, by just a board. But it was apparently not, an ironical thing. I think Lucy Pika just genuinely thought that Text the Nation was about times when you've been hit by boards. So thank you very much for your story, Lucy.
Are we going to hear the story?
It was very long.
It's long and it's quite horrible.
No, it was just very, very long.
It's quite a good idea to do a very, very specific text the nation, though. Because we'd probably, if you make it very, you don't probably only get three or four eligible answers.
we should try and think of something really precise.
Well, let's do that because we haven't got a text the nation subject for this.
Let's have a little thinkle during the next record.
A little thinkle thunkle. Here's one right now, on topic, though, from a lovely lady named Claire. I don't know if she's lovely. I'm just assuming she is. Dear A and J, I'm a primary school teacher who has made it my quest not to be a shouty teacher. I suffered from this breed of teacher as a child, and I'm sure this is why I was so nervous and shy, and I didn't even have a boyfriend until I was 18. When I do raise my voice to the little brigands, it's only for the most serious of crimes. For example, armpit farting, talking about sexing, and obnoxious farting when sat on the carpet. I always feel guilty after a shouting outbreak, or a shout break, but I don't want to show them weakness, so I apologise to them in the third person. For example, Miss Deegan is very sorry for raising her voice. Miss Deegan didn't mean to shout. She just doesn't like those farty noises. I find that everyone is a winner with this method of apologising, and I'm trying to implement it with my boyfriend. Lots of love, Claire.
Why? Why the third person?
Well, because...
Isn't that slightly demented?
It's a little bit mental. But she is saying, it wasn't me that lost my temper and lost control.
Yeah, but it was.
It was Miss Deegan. No, it was Miss Deegan.
Oh, as if the whole teacher thing is a role she's playing.
Kind of, yeah. It's her alter ego. And so she, on behalf of Miss Deegan, would like to apologise for Miss Deegan's little outbreak, her shout break, because of the obnoxious farting. When she says obnoxious farting, does that mean, like, farts that are just so...
That could, I mean, that's like the...
Whiffy, they're beyond the pale, they need to be told off.
No, primary school farts are particularly bad. Little kids.
Yeah.
But that could be the basis of a disturbing direct-to-video thriller.
Uh-huh.
If, what's her name?
Miss Deegan.
If Miss Deegan... in inverted commas, starts doing other things that Miss Deegan doesn't take responsibility for around the primary school.
Yes.
Miss Deegan has been very naughty and cut off someone's hand. Miss Deegan doesn't want to get the police involved.
Exactly. This is only the beginning.
Miss Deegan's burnt another classroom. Now, Miss Deegan's very sorry.
I think we should alert the parents of the children in her class.
That's,
and get them all taken into care.
It's kind of a good technique, though. I might try that.
It's a good technique. Here's one from Christian, a he-man. Mm. Wow, that's even better than a man, isn't it?
Better than a male man.
Very muscly.
Yeah.
Aged between somewhere between 18 to 25.
That means he's
from
a master
Nottingham.
Of the universe.
Yes. Dear Adroit and Juggernaut.
Nice.
I was 16 years old, sitting on a bench beside a bin with my friend Peter.
Yeah, so, hello, Peter.
It's a good Saturday afternoon. I was suffering. Hey, should we go sit by the bin? It's like, yeah. See you there at four.
Which bin? Oh, that's my favourite bin.
I love that bin. I was suffering from hay fever and got a huge load of phlegmy nastiness in the back of my throat. Not wanting to look like a yob, I turned my head and spat into the bin.
Sure.
My phlegm was so strong and aerodynamic that it passed directly through the two side openings of the bin and onto the cheek of a tiny old woman sat on the bench on the other side. I leapt up and apologised immediately, absolutely mortified. It was stuck like some kind of hideous, slimy sea creature on the side of her face. I had tissues in my pocket and collected the horrific specimen into them and deposited the whole thing promptly in the bin, still apologising profusely. She was amiable about the whole thing and even called me dear. So I got this mental image now of a sweet little old lady with this huge green thing on her face, and then Christian sort of leaning over with some tissues trying to... 'cause it's quite difficult to pick up a mucoid mess with a tissue.
Mm-hmm.
You have to lay the tissue on it, then sort of pinch it and lift it, don't you?
Right.
And to do that on a strange old lady's face...
Can you just tilt your head, lovey? That's great. I'm just going to...
That's all right, dear. Don't worry about pinching the cheek. You know, you can leave the oyster there if you want to.
And then you would have had to do a couple of swipes to clean up the meniscus.
Meniscus. The trail. You know, I'm confused by the plausibility of that, though. How tall is the bin? Is it like a high bin? So he's trying to gob over the bin and it sort of goes through the bars? Or
I just think the thing is, I don't know. But yeah. I would guess that phlegm is very unpredictable.
Isn't it?
Isn't it? It can go any which way, every which way but loose.
Sure.
you know.
That's a good point, man. Thanks.
Thanks.
Here's one from Richard Cosgrove, and it's a bit of a confessional one, this, from Dublin. Dear Adam and Joe, 3 years ago I was living with two of my best friends, Louie and Pip. I mean, I love...
Lulu and Pipster.
Louie and Pip, they're great. We were just out of college and permanently penniless. Our regular tipple was a fizzy wine-like substance called Charlemagne. I've never heard of Charlemagne. 1.5 litres of sparkling wee-wee for £5.99 bargain. Anyway, one night I was on my own imbibing this cheap muck and surfing the web on Louie's laptop. With one big just-poured glass on the couch beside me and Louis's computer on my knees, I promptly fell asleep. Upon waking, I was horrified to discover that the glass of Charlemagne had spilled all over the laptop keyboard. The keys were covered in this sickly, sweet, sticky, cheap booze, so I wiped as much off as I could, plonked the screen down, and went to bed. The next day, Lou couldn't figure out why the A key, the question mark key, and the dash key, and several others weren't working. Like the coward I am, I pleaded ignorance. To this day, Lou has to copy and paste the letter A when he's finished typing. And to make matters worse, he blames his girlfriend Pip for the broken keys, claiming she must have spilled tea on it or something. I've always felt guilty, but I never owned up and apologise. If he's listening this morning, because he is an occasional Black Squadron member, Louie, I apologise wholeheartedly for spilling plonk on your laptop and lying about it for the last 3 years. Sorry, man. But if he's not listening, then he'll never know, and I'll never tell him. Ha 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 ha! I love you. Bye. Richard Cosgrove. So that's a confession. He's got it off his chest there. I mean, that's a shame, isn't it, when you ruin someone else's...
That's a terrible lie he's perpetrated, and he's lived with that guilt for 3 years.
Of course.
That's his punishment.
But that's the kind of thing as well that you would think there would be so many ways of just dealing with it, but if you get a GUI keyboard, it's unless you just go out and buy a whole new laptop or take it in to be professionally cleaned, it's something that you just live with for years and years and years, and you never get round to sorting it. And that key always sticks, and it drives you mental, and you can't do anything about it.
Outside my tiny little cafe in Paris, you'll find two men called Adam and Joe. All day they sit just talking away. Sometimes I listen and hear what they say. Blah 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 waffles. Blah 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 pancakes. They're making a podcast apparently. It sounds like a load of old crap to me. Oh, I am making the joke.
Now listen, Taffin News. Okay, we are still trying to track down Bronholm. Where does he live? Do you reckon he lives in Malibu?
Yeah, I do, only because we had an email in. Here we go. That's from Rebecca in St. Leonard's-on-Sea. Dearest Adam and Joe, just thought I should email in, especially in light of the Taffin theme ongoing. I shall drop a name, and that name is Pierce Bronholm.
That's a big name.
He is an old family friend.
No.
Although I haven't seen him since I was three at his house in Malibu. And his son, Sean, punched me in the nose.
Yeah, well, you deserved it.
What, for just not being Bronholm?
Exactly.
After that mishap, we all dressed up as pop stars and did a karaoke. And did a bit of karaoke. They didn't do a karaoke. I was Boy George. Although I cannot remember who Pierce was, I was too scarred by the punching incident. By all accounts, he's a lovely man, and I think he would find all this Taffin malarkey on the show very funny indeed. I shall ask my grandpa, who is the tenuous link between myself and Pierce, and see if he still has a contact for him. And if so, she'll forward him some of your podcasts. Lots of love, Rebecca, St. Leonard's-on-Sea.
Wow.
A female girl. So all sorts of exciting elements to that. First of all, the mental picture I now have of the Bronholm home.
The Bronholm.
In Malibu. I mean, it's probably beautiful.
Of course it is.
It's right on the coast.
Yeah.
It's absolutely beautiful. It's not, where he is not very windy. Mm-hmm. So it's really lovely. It's exposed, but it's lovely.
I imagine it's a combination of the ancient and the modern.
Yes.
So wonder, lots of twigs everywhere.
Well, a lot of it is themed like his films. There's a big volcano. There's Dante's Peak.
Exactly.
He's had Dante's Peak built.
It's a big,
and that's in the middle of the pools.
Well, that's the heating. That's how they heat the house, is with a volcano. And also there's a big, long slide that goes down.
Why? Yes.
It's just sort of a Bond thing.
Yes. Because Bond has a lot of action sequences on slides.
Exactly.
There's that famous water park sequence.
No, that was Dalton, wasn't it? When they are sliding down.
There should be. No, this is a good idea. This is a good idea for a chase sequence in a Bond film.
Yeah.
He's in America and they just end up sort of driving their cars into Wet and Wild.
Yeah.
And Bond has to get away, so he goes on one of those slides.
Right.
And all the villains go down after him.
And listen, if you don't like living in the Bron home, then.
This is what the doorbell sounds like, right?
Then maybe you shouldn't be living here!
It's very exciting, and we're going to try and make contact with Bron Hom in the Bron Home.
This is from Gary. Here's a nice variation on the Bron Home clip.
Then maybe you shouldn't be living here!
Oh, my
wow.
God. Wow.
I think bits of my brain have been rewired. There's glasses smashing all around the
studio
there.
You know what? I'm actually going to move.
Yeah, because you've finally got the message.
Yeah, I'm going to move.
Well, good. That was Arj. He's a sound man that works with Gary, and they sent that in. Thank you very much.
That must be just within legal limits.
Surely that's beyond legal limits. I mean, that we didn't clear that with the technicians at the castle.
I think that could be dangerous.
I'm sure that smashed a few amps. Yes, you were saying about Jaguar Skills.
Jaguar Skills. DJ Jaguar Skills.
He's a mysterious man.
He's a mysterious man, but we've both been corresponding with him this week, have we not?
Yeah, but you can't... No one knows what he looks like, right? We don't know what he looks like.
No, I did an image search for him on Google.
When he DJs, he wears like a mask and you can't see what his face is.
But he's a very generous and talented man, and we've been corresponding with him, and we sent him some bits and bobbles. Mm-hmm. And DJ Jaguar Skills, thank you for all the amazing stuff you've sent us. He sent us a big goodie bag full of exciting stuff that he's created.
He's remixed some of our stuff as well.
But amazing.
We might play that in future shows, but here's the results of some of his Taffin-based efforts. Fire off the first one, James. That's amazing.
Yes. Here, and if you like that, listeners, have a listen to this one. You abandoned me. Now don't leave me anymore. Just a vacancy. We got an interesting email, listeners.
Yeah.
We got an interesting email from a listener called Connor Shaw. It says, "Hey, Buck Skywalker and Corn Vader."
Yeah, I like it.
"I was on iPlayer the other day when I saw that Points of View was on the page. I was very disappointed to find out that they have changed the Points of View... dot, dot, dot. Then the email just ended. Email suddenly stopped.
Right.
And it said from Connor Shaw, he'd CC'd his mum.
Uh-huh.
He'd sent it to us and CC'd his mum.
Oh, she needs to know.
Yeah, and the email just stopped there. So I was shocked, because you know on this programme, we follow Points of View, and we're big fans of its theme tune, aren't we?
Blah-boobity-bye-ya.
Let's hear the old Points of View theme tune, please. Blah-boobity-bye-ya, ba-ba. Blah-boobity-bye-ya, boo-ba. Blah-blah-boobity-bye-ya, blah-blah-blah-blah-blah. Bing-bing. It's one of the most uplifting, lovely theme tunes in television history.
I always feel that you need to stress to the listeners, though, that maybe aren't so familiar with our rambles and whiffles and waffles, that is real. That's real. That's not you doing
And it's been
thing.
The real theme tune to Points of View for years.
Yeah.
And we talked about this a year ago or something.
Mm.
Maybe.
Longer.
Maybe longer than that.
Longer.
Anyway, Connor remembers that, and he was shocked when he looked on the iPlayer, and you can see this yourself, I had a look as well. This is the new Points of View theme. Here is the new Points of View theme, and when you hear this, something's missing. You'll quickly pick up that something very critical is now missing.
Uh-huh.
Let's have a listen to the new theme.
What? So they've thought, well, it's a classic tune. We've got to keep the tune, but maybe the vocals were a little goofy, so we'll remove those.
Do you think they heard our segment and became embarrassed? Because we were suggesting that the blue boobity bar bars were maybe not too respectful of the content of the show. Do you know what I mean?
Yes, it seemed...
Trivialising listeners' complaints.
It seemed like the theme music for a show watched by insane toddlers.
Yeah, yeah. So anyway, I was shocked. I was profoundly shocked.
Of course. Bereaved, I imagine you felt.
boobity boobos.
Blah boobity bias.
The blah boobity bias had been taken off the song. So I contacted the Blah Boobities.
Did you?
Who are the group that sang the original song.
Yeah, they're headlining the Pyramid Stage this year.
They are. But
yeah, with the Wombles.
They're based in Norwich, actually.
Are they?
Yeah, very near you. They're one of Norwich's most popular a cappella groups.
Yeah.
And I contacted them on the phone and they were shocked. They were really shocked.
Hurt.
You know, I didn't know I'd be the person breaking the news. You would have expected they would have been told by the BBC, but they hadn't. The castle hadn't informed them.
That's shoddy.
So they were shocked. So I went down there. And I had a talk to them, and basically we tried to put it right.
Who did you speak to? Blah, Boobity, or Bayer?
Julian, and Julian, he's the main guy, Julian Staples.
Julian Staples Bluebity.
Yes.
His full name.
So we decided to try and set the record straight and put the... We decided to put the Bluebities back onto the song, but as we were doing it... I mean, they kind of lost it, you'll hear. I mean, the atmosphere was quite upbeat at the beginning of the recording, but I don't know, it sort of broke down. And this is a bit sad, actually. This is the recording.
What did we have a bloopity do to you?
And it... the whole atmosphere got really morose. And then Gillian, who is on the falsetto, she just started freaking out. Yeah. And she knocked over the mic stand. Gee. And Julian tried to calm her down. And it just got really ugly.
Sure.
So it's a great shame, really, and they gave me this letter to read out.
The Boobities.
Yeah, it says another layer of fiction. The letter says, "Dear,
on top of this huge fictional cake you baked."
The letter says, "Dear Boobity BBC Boo." Why boobity why oh why? Did you take our boobity boobity bar bar singing off your show? Blah blah. Now hang on. Dear boobity BBC boo, why boobity why oh why did you take our boobity bar bar singing off your show? Blah blah.
Hey.
That's what they want to say to Jeremy Vine and the producers.
Quite right. Well,
I think the point of that has come across very strongly indeed.
I was quite drunk last night. I'm sorry.
D-H-E-A-D-A-M, M-S-N-J-O-V, B-O-D-C-A-S-T, that's the podcast groove, baby.
Interference groove. Somebody gonna get that? Oh, it's mine.
D-H-E-A-D-A-M, M-S-N-J-O-V. B-O-D-C-A-S-T, that's the podcast groove, baby.
Gamelan groove. I'm playing this myself. I'm the Gamelan king. That's enough, Gamelan.
T-H-E-A-D-A-M, M-S-N-J-O-E. B-O-D-C-A-S-T, that's the podcast groove, baby. T-H-E-A-D-A-M, M-S-N-J-O-E. B-O-D-C-A-S-T, that's the podcast groove, baby.
Right. Time to back up the groove. That was a mess. The whole groove was an unfocused mess. That's enough.
Welcome to the midpoint of the podcast, The Fulcrum.
James has taken a great deal of care to ensure that this midpoint is exactly halfway through the podcast.
Precisely halfway through the podcast.
It might not be.
It won't.
Because that would be unfair.
What if it was, though? What if you look at the little timer on your player and it's precisely halfway through? Then James would be the wickedest.
Well, you know what, James? If you do manage to put it at halfway through, you could play the Noon Barrier jingle now.
We're gonna push through the Noon Barrier. It's gonna happen soon. We're gonna leave the morning behind. Enjoy the afternoon. Half the day has already disappeared. Where does the time go? I just do not know. Let's push through the Noon Barrier now.
There you go. He managed it.
But then he'd have to... What if he has to... But then he has to shape either side of it to the precisely...
Yeah.
And so, it's a very challenging.
James is rubbing his...
But this is the kind of challenge that produces relish. Sorrow. I wish, James, I wish I had a presenter who would give me like a really hardcore thing that would push my skills to the limit.
Come on, James. This podcast could win some kind of award, you know.
For Equilibrium.
We've we've won What's It?
We've won the What's It's award.
Oh, everyone dreams of winning a What's It, but we've never won one.
No.
That's a good little tongue twister, isn't it? Everyone dreams of winning a What's It, but we've never won one. What? That's not a good tongue twister after all. Hey, so we're at the midpoint, or at least, you know, as mid as James could manage it. But usually, for the last few weeks...
James is looking at, he's staring at daggers, staring at us with daggers.
It doesn't have to be the midpoint.
I've had to put my shades on because it's such a hard stare I'm getting.
Just put the Noon Barrier thing out.
Are you related to Paddington Bear?
It's a symbolic midpoint, okay? It doesn't have to be the exact midpoint. Anyway, at this symbolic midpoint, for the last few weeks, we've been having made-up jokes. But I kind of got the wind taken out of my sails by a bit of pointing out done by Sam, who's a mailman. And he says, "Dear Adam and Joe, the Gary Newman, Gary Oldman joke was made on Peter Serafinowicz's O News segment, as well as many other places too."
Dude, I thought that of that joke in my head. I had a different variant of it.
Yeah,
we said that when we read it out, though.
I can't believe it. And Peter's thing.
Cornballs pointed that out.
I'd even seen that O News thing, that Peter Serafinowicz thing. It's very funny. I just thought it was the funniest joke I'd ever heard, and I'd forgotten about it. And not to disrespect the guy that sent it in now, who's going to be thinking, "I did make it up. I didn't know." You know, I know you did, man. Listen, we've all come out of this looking bad, all right?
Apart from me.
Apart from Joe Scornballs, who carries around a bucket of pure nitrogen.
It's protective scorn.
Oxide.
I walk around in a scorn cloud. It's a defense mechanism.
Scorn cloud. He's got little syringes with his scorn in case he needs them. He just runs up behind someone and pops them in their buttocks. Scorn for you.
If you just put a little drop of scorn on everything, and if anything goes wrong, you can go, "No, look, put a little drop of scorn on it earlier."
Yeah, exactly.
Nothing to do with me.
Have some of this on your scorn flakes. So anyway, there you go. That's the midpoint. Huh?
A midpoint.
It's a bit of a weird midpoint.
I'm worried. James is genuinely upset.
No, he's okay.
He's got a 100-yard stare.
He's the king!
He's the king. He can do anything he wants!
He's the king of the cutters. He can sort it out. Right, so let's get back on with a podcast number 11 of 2011. Here we go!
Adam and Joe. Ow. Adam and Joe. Ow. Adam and Joe. Ow. The podcast. Adam and Joe.
Touch me!
Adam and Joe.
I can't believe you said Tippy Toes. It's my favourite dancing dog.
Is it? Who's Tippy Toes?
Yeah. How quickly you forget.
Where's
Tippy
Toes from?
How quickly the nation forgets. From last year's Britain's Got Talent.
Flipping heck.
Tippy Toes. How quickly people forget.
What did Tippy Toes do?
What did Tippy Toes do?
Did he dance around?
Sure, he danced around. I can't quite remember what he did.
Did he dance around on his own, or was someone helping him? Was he dancing with a Hugh man?
He was dancing with a Hugh woman.
Was he?
Yeah. As she danced around, Tippy Toes, I believe, if I remember rightly, followed her on It's Tippy Toes.
That is the best Tippy Toes dog dancing act ever seen.
Tippy Toes was usurped by a singing dog this year.
Was he?
Yeah.
Was
upping
he?
The dog stakes, was he? Anyway,
what
enough
is
of
you
that.
Can't just say they can't just drop that in, by the
well,
by.
You're the only person
what does the dog sing? Dogs can't sing. What
dog
does the dog sing?
Howls in a pained way.
Yeah.
No, that would be better. Well, it's like, that sort of thing. You know, that's for next year, isn't it? Expecting Boggins to turn up on Britain's Got Talent.
You know, I'm taking Boggins to Glasgow on a string.
Are you? Where have you found Boggins? This is very sudden.
I've located the little boy who we housed Boggins with.
Right, this is really coming out of the blue. This is very important stuff you're just suddenly laying on the front of the show.
It's turning into a more involved link than we thought. Now it's got important. Now it's suddenly got
carry
really
on.
Important.
So you found the,
found the little boy.
Why? Why? I mean, why all of a sudden after so long?
Actually, he tried
a year
to track
and a
us
bit.
Down because he's upset. Boggins ruined their lives. Basically,
right.
The life of this family that we housed Boggins with,
right? Because Boggins was back here a few shows ago. Or we could, I mean, we didn't see him, but we could smell him.
Yeah. They were on a day trip to London, but they want to get rid of him desperately. It's ruining their entire lives,
right?
And tearing them apart as a family. You're tearing me apart.
And crazy. So I think we might have to look after him for a little
What's
while.
What's Brogan's doing to tear the family apart?
What's he not doing?
I mean, he might tear the furniture apart, but not the family.
Sure. How do you think a family responds to having a little stinky person dragging its Botox across the floor?
So you're going to take Boggins back?
for Glastonbury, yeah.
For Glastonbury.
Yeah, yeah.
And Boggins is going to be there on a string.
He's on a string, yeah. We'll tie him up outside the OB van.
Oh, that's amazing.
Yo, what's going on? What's the scene? Who the heck are these crazy guys?
Well, one's called Adam and the other's called Joe, and you're listening to their podcast.
Oh.
Now, it's time for some traveller's tales, and regular listeners will know that we have a particularly beautiful Count Buckley's author jingle for this section of
the
show.
Well, let's remind people why not.
Travelling tales, tales of travelling on the train, or an automobile, or an aeroplane. I want to know what your travelling tales.
All aboard the Skylark!
It's powerful, it's punchy, it's short, it's aggressive.
Like me.
I've pointed out in the past. And so we've had this email from Jamie, a male man, aged 29 years in Hamburg. Dear Adam and Jojo, recently pointed out that the Travelling Tales jingle was, quote, very aggressive and, quote, hardcore. I've made an even unfriendlier version. It took me hours. I hope you like it. I love you. Bye. Jamie. So here is Jamie's version of the Travelling Tales jingle made even more aggressive. Fury, furious. Oh. Oh, I didn't hear.
All aboard the Skylark!
It got really dark at the end. Wait, who first did that voice? That's a voice you get in a lot of sort of American thrash metal.
Yeah, I don't know. Do Gwar
who first
sing like
did that?
No, Gwar are a joke band anyway, though, aren't they?
We're the most evil voice.
Is that Red Pepper?
Red Pepper, wasn't it? I don't know, is it someone like Rammstein? Do they sing a bit like that? And
I wonder who the
first person to sing like that was.
Oh, Napalm Death, they did a lot.
It's very evil and very confident,
yeah,
isn't it? It's frightening because it's so confident.
A black metalist could tell us about that.
Mm. Anyway, that's terrific, Jamie. Well done. Very good work.
But the fact was that it was a little bit too aggressive for Cornballs, the jingle originally I'm talking about. And a few people have sent us in mellower versions. Mm. Actually, there was a lot of really beautiful kind of folky versions of the jingle that came in throughout the week. I hope we'll play them not just this week, but in weeks to come as well. But I'd like to play one particularly good one right now from a regular listener, Rue. This is from Rue's dad, but she says, "Dear Buckulicious and Unicorn Balls, I felt it was high time to redress the balance of Jingle Jungle cover versions. I was complaining that there have been a lot of covers of Joe's Retro Texanation jingle, no covers of mine. So thank you very much for all the people who set that right." She says, "In the past, it swayed heavily towards Scornballs and his sole jungular offering in favour of Count Buckley's. My dad, Mr. Graham Hodge, has been a fan of Bobby Dylan, the sexy tortoise, ever since Bobbles first poked his head out of his shell in the 1960s. Dad is a very talented singer and guitarist in his own right, so in honour of Mr. Zimmerman and your good selves, he's recorded the attached version of Travelin' Tales for your listening pleasure. He's even included a Dylan-related in-joke for you at the end. I couldn't be more proud. Hope you enjoy it. Here it is.
Travelin' tales, tales of travelling on a train, or an automobile or an aeroplane. I want to know what your travelin' tales. Hey man, what's the problem?
Put the electric guitar on and get on board the Skylark.
Okay, man.
That's great. Thank you so much.
That's more like it. More soothing.
Yeah. Rue's dad, that is, Mr. Graham Hodge. Thank you so much for that. And complete with the... Was it the Manchester Free Trade Hall where the Judas thing happened? Everything happened at the Manchester Free Trade Hall, didn't it? Birth of punk, Judas, anything else?
There was a brilliant bring and buy sale.
Yeah, was there?
Love it. Really
okay,
lucky
so
dip.
Listen, that's the end of Travelling Tales.
We're waiting on for about an hour. Haven't even got into any meat yet.
So, you got one there?
Hi, Adam and Joe. When I travel by bus or tube, I sometimes get sat next to personal space invaders. People who sit with their legs too far akimbo.
Ooh.
Or squish you up against the window with all your luggage on your face.
Do you ever do that, Kimbo? Because you got long legs.
I have a big issue with legs akimbo. Yeah. I get furious. I believe that, this is on the London Underground, I believe that the armrests are a mark of the division of your space.
Right.
And if you open your legs such that your knees go beyond the armrest division line, you are doing an illegal, and you should have your knees chopped off, probably.
Yeah, or at least smacked.
Yeah, but especially people in shorts, because then you get these, we've talked about this before, you get this very light leg hair contact on your knee. It is strangely sort of erotic.
Yeah.
For me, anyway.
If you're wearing shorts as well.
Well, of course, if I'm wearing shorts, everything's erotic. The atmosphere around me is highly charged with sexy sparks.
So what's this person's technique?
Yeah, sorry, I forgot to read the rest of the email. To combat this, I like to push my leg against theirs in an awkwardly, nearly sexy way.
Nice.
Sometimes slightly rubbing up and down. I do that, but not with my leg. I have found this quickly solves the space invader problem. Some people even change seats.
Well, this is a good tactic in general. It's emerging, isn't it? That if you want to freak people out, the thing to do is go sexy on them.
Be proactive.
Either, you know, touch them gently or, you know, pat the seat next to you if you'd like people to avoid.
Yes, pat the seat and get kisses. And then do a sexy come hither with your finger.
And then if you really want to add to it, you can go.
Everyone loves doing
that. People away.
But that's a good idea. Just brush the knees. That was from Tom Fuller.
Brush the knees. Here's one right now from a young lady. She's part of our 16 to 25 demographic. She's a 19-year-old female woman, and she's called Sarah. She says, hello, Count Buck and Balls and Sir Corncobble. I often have to get the Metropolitan line, and the layout of the seats on this line means that it provides great feet seats. So I always put my feet on the seat opposite me. 2 days ago, a woman got on the train, and even though there were plenty of other spare seats, she full-on shouted at me, get your feet off that seat! I don't want to have to sit on a seat where your dirty shoes have been. It's people like you who are so inconsiderate that I have to deal with, and I can't stand it! Then she proceeded to dust off the seat with her book and sit down. I immediately reverted back to a child, like I was being told off in school, and muttered, in a slightly sarcastic accent, all right, sorry, and she just sneered at me. Then I had to sit opposite her for the rest of the journey, and then she got off at the same stop as me, so I had to walk down the platform and out of the station next to her. It was awkward, and even though I was in the wrong, I still feel the punishment was too harsh for the crime. With unnecessary shouting. Love from Sarah, a 19-year-old female lady. Love you, bye. Well, listen, Sarah, I think that lady was right! Get your feet off the seats! What are you doing there? Why does she have to sit there where your feet have been? It's not like a lounge. They're not like Lazy Boy special big seat cushions for you to just put your feet up on. Other people have to sit there.
Did she have her shoes off?
I don't think
she doesn't say anything. She's got her shoes on the seat.
Yeah, she's got.
Yeah, that I'm afraid that
it's not acceptable.
That neither Buckley's or Cornwall's can approve of that kind of thing. We're on the screamy old lady's side.
Yeah, and she said she feels the punishment was too harsh for the crime.
If the carriage is empty, shouting. If the carriage is empty and the shoes are off,
right,
and the sock feet are on there, I think that's cool.
You'd rather socks on there.
Yeah, socks. Yeah.
Listen, here's the deal. I'm laying it down.
Socks don't tread on the pavement the whole time, and the old doggy plops and stuff.
Yeah, but they're stinky. I don't want other people's sock feet on there. Here's the deal. If you have to put your feet up, lay out a little, you know...
bring a little sort of comfort blanket.
Exactly.
Like Linus.
Or what Dr. Buckle sometimes does if he's determined to put his feet up is lay your coat out.
Lay your coat out. I don't want your disgusting coat all over the thing. You know what I think you should have is little plastic boots, disposable plastic boots.
Booties.
Booties that you should put on.
They've probably got that in Japan, don't they?
Probably.
Well, imagine they... Here's one from Andy right now. He says, I cycle from my home in Stockport to Manchester every day. Rather than run the gauntlet of death down the busy roads and risk being crushed by a bus, I weave my way through the back streets, cycle paths and parks. Probably once a month, I wish it happened more, I cross paths with a very old, mysterious Rastafarian man with a big grey beard, walking stick and a large high-vis jacket, no matter what the weather. His jacket signals his approach from a long way off, and this is when my excitement begins to grow. When I get in range, he shouts at the very top of his voice, "Go on, Baker Grove!" in his unmistakable Jamaican accent and a friendly grin. The first few times this happened, I was a bit shocked. I didn't know how to react. I just smiled and nodded my head as I passed, expecting that he would stop shouting this fairly soon. However, it's carried on and has probably occurred in the region of 15 to 20 times. I now get myself ready when I see him approaching, and I excitedly shout, "Good morning!" at him with a massive grin. This makes my day and puts me in a good frame of mind and a good mood for work. I would like to believe that I'm the only person that he does this to. I'll feel dirty and undervalued if he just does it to any cyclist that crosses his path, says Andy. So that's nice. He's got a special relationship going with the Biker Grove man. That's quite a random thing as well, to shout at a cyclist.
That's good.
Go on, Biker Grove!
It's pure joie de vivre.
That's great.
Would you... I mean, you could be the person in that equation. You could regularly shout at someone in your neighbourhood.
No, I would want them to shout at me, though, because I'm a cyclist.
Do you see anybody regularly? Like someone you don't actually know who you go past?
That's a good question. Only the guy... Sometimes I... You know, the guy on the train that takes my tickets.
Shout at him.
Shout at him.
Shout at him.
What am I going to shout? Train boy!
Yeah, there you go. When you see the first time you see him from a distance.
Ladies and gentlemen, please have your tickets. Train boy!
I like to change the lyrics of songs from time to time.
Lock the taskbar
to make them refer to things I do.
Oh yeah, oh yeah.
I call it appropriation, and as far as I'm aware, it isn't a crime. I wonder if it's something you do too.
Yes it is, yes it is, yes it is.
Yeah, that's the deal. All right. A lot of people sing Lock the Taskbar, you know. Is that that's a PC thing though, isn't it? Locking the Taskbar. I don't get that on my Macintosh computer. Anyway, here's another example, though, from Merrick. He's the malest of the mailmen from France, he says. And he says, "Dear evil scientist and his hairy homunculus, while feeding my 9-year-old daughter, Clementine, I start to sing to the tune of Screamin' Jay Hawkins' I Put a Spell on You. I put a bib on you, 'cause you're mine. Better stop the things you do. I ain't lying, no, I ain't lying. I can't stand it, baby. The food is flying around. Until you learn to eat your food with just a little more care, I'll put a bib on you, 'cause you're mine.'"
Wowza.
And he says, "If you ever want to see a 9-month-old looking bewildered and terrified, this is a good way to go about it. Thanks, Merrick." He's a mailman from France.
Thanks a lot, Merrick. Here's one from Steve Bent. It says, "Dear Buxom, Buxton and Cornucopia Cornish, on the subject of pop appropriation, I thought I'd mention how my film nerd friends and I used to refer to art house director Wim Wenders as 'Hey, Wim Wenders,' and always in a bombastic Dame Shirley Bassey styley whenever his name came up. Example, question: what's one of the wrecks this weekend? Answer: are they showing the Motorcycle Diaries again on Saturday? And on Sunday, there's the new 'Hey, Wim Wenders, ba 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 da' movie Land of Plenty." We also called Jim Jarmusch, Jam Jarmusch, and M. Night Shyamalan, M. School Night Shyamalan. Ah, they were the salad days indeed.
Good times.
Steve Bent.
Dear Adam and Joe, this is from Michelle. She says, "When I was younger, whenever my dad would catch me talking on the phone, he would sing loudly to the tune of Willie Nelson's 'On the Road Again.'" On the phone again. I can't believe she's on the phone again. What's worse is I now catch myself singing the tune in my head whenever I see my partner playing on his phone. Anyway, kisses, Michelle. That is a good one. I'm going to use that on my wife when I go in there. Because, and, you know, stop me if this is a grotesque and sexist generalization.
Stop. Good. We've also had an email. No, go on.
I was just going to say, ladies love to talk on the phone. And when you come into the kitchen, it'll be fun to say.
I can't believe you said that.
I gave you the chance to stop me.
I tried to stop you.
I know, but then you made me carry on.
I tried to stop you.
On the phone
ladies
again.
Ladies like to talk on the phone.
It's true. It says it in a book that I read.
The sexist book.
No, it's written by sexist scientists.
I love sexist scientists.
Yeah.
There's a unit of them based at one of the British universities, isn't there?
Yeah, the sexist unit.
Yeah, the sexist unit. Who paid for that?
You did.
Was it Jim Davidson? I think Jim, doesn't it? Oh, no, that's a different department.
Yeah, it was Jim Davidson and the other...
sexist comedians.
Comedian cup.
Yeah, well, good for them. It's good for them.
And me.
And you.
And me.
That's the end of the programme. Bye-bye. Well, that's appropriation for this week.
Well, no, come on. Look, I tell you one that
loads
of is people doing variations on Papa Don't Preach in a fairly obvious way. But I thought this was a good one that summed all those messages up. This is from Ilse, a he chap. And he says, when frequenting our favourite Indian restaurant, it is customary amongst myself and my friends, indeed rude not to set the menu perusal to the melody of Papa Don't Preach by Madonna with these words. Papa Don, please, I'm in trouble deep. Papa Don, please, I don't know what to eat. But I've made up my mind. I'll have a chicken kashmiri with an onion bhaji. Papa Don, please.
That's good. It's good, 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 good stuff. Good stuff.
And you wanted to wrap it up early. And you thought the segment had finished. Wrong.
Wrong. Well, now it has finished. That's appropriation for this week.
I'll put a bib on you, because you're mine.
Now, I think we've come across a killer Text the Nation this week. It took us a while to get round to it.
Yeah, even though Alex says here, I am the groom who's getting married to Helen in 3 weeks' time. He sparked this whole thing off in a way. He says, I was very shocked to hear our names on the radio and ran upstairs to drag my fiance out of the shower. She left a trail of shampoo through the house as she realised that we were about to be the subject of the next Text the Nation. My best man was about to get his speech written for him live on the radio by Adam and Joe. Alas, it was not to be. In true Adam and Joe style, by the time we got to the radio, the subject had in fact completely changed. I've no idea what Text the Nation is now.
Well, Text the Nation is now all about domestic decoration disputes.
Yeah, the triple D.
When you move in together and you have to decide what kind of a style you're going to have your accommodation in and arguments arise, or if you've lived for a while and a new object or idea enters your brain space, you want to impose it on your livingness,
yeah,
and your partner disagrees. So here are some good ones, all right? Here is one that's come in from Stevie, who's a man from Glasgow. He says he's a Sith Lord.
Is he?
Yeah.
Dangerous.
And he says, who wouldn't want a full-scale Darth Vader replica helmet as a living room centrepiece? Who wouldn't want that? My girlfriend, apparently. It has since been moved to my Fortress of Solitude, where we can now be alone together.
Fortress of Solitude. Good one.
Yeah. So that's a good example. But that feels like the girlfriend has had a pretty instantaneous dominance. She's just said, no. And, yeah, and he's gone. He's capitulated. We know who wears the trousers there, Sith Lord.
It's a shame, isn't it, when stuff like that starts getting moved out of the house.
Tom, who is a male practical man from Buxton in Norfolk. Domestic decorating disputes. DDD. Don't get me started. Her. I want curtains down to the floor. Me. It's completely impractical. Not only will we have to pull the furniture away from the window, but also the heat from the radiators will be trapped beneath the curtain, leaving us cold and miserable, just like this argument.
Had this exact same argument the other day. Why do the curtains have to drag along the floor? Can't we have them just a little, like, inch dangling above? Isn't that normal?
No.
They're going to get dirty. No. The bottoms of the curtains are going to get dirty.
Here's one from Rachel. My dad painted a huge 15th century king and queen brass rubbing on the dining room wall for a party in the 70s.
Good effort.
It's still there. Along with a 3-foot postman bat, a 7-foot penguin, and at the bottom of the stairs, a spider web stroke Care Bear mural up the stairs.
What?
She's actually written Muriel up the stairs on purpose. A kangaroo stroke clown montage, all horrible. So that dad has done loads of Muriels over the years.
I'm not talking Muriels inside the house. I would do it if I could.
Well, at least they're hidden inside the house.
Yeah.
Everyone can see them outside.
I'm not going to put a Care Bear mural with spider webs on the outside.
Do a big spider web with lots of Care Bears trapped in it, all terrified. Here's another one. Hi, Adam and Joe. This is Nick in King's Cross. Of course it is. Me and my girlfriend Liz just moved in, and she made me put her vegetable poster in the kitchen instead of my Whitney Houston poster. I am sad about this.
What?
You should just combine the two and have Whitney Houston cradling a vegetable.
Then everyone
would
be happy.
I think you can get those posters.
What vegetable is she cradling?
It's a big bit of broccoli.
Not a marrow or something.
No. No.
Whitney Houston with a big
It's from
broccoli.
That Christian Vegetable program.
Would it
Veggie
be...
Tales.
I thought that was a bloke, Christian Vegetable. Would it be late period Whitney or would it be like adult Whitney or
yeah,
young,
it would
fresh
be,
Whitney?
It would be adult Whitney.
Adult Whitney with some broccoli. I want that poster.
Here's another one, finally, from Harriet. Dear Adam and Joe, my boyfriend collects film posters. We live in a very petite flat, so most of them end up under the bed, making less room for my shoes. He has four big framed Kill Bill posters in our hallway, leaning against the wall as there's nowhere else to put them up. We've been here for 4 years, but the posters make it look like we've just moved in. I hate them. I sometimes imagine ways I could break them accidentally by brushing past them and knocking them over. He says they're worth money, so we have to keep them. Would you like to buy them? They're yours for £20. Thanks, Harriet. She could so easily bust them up.
Yeah.
All she needs is to bring a ladder in the front room, anything. I mean, very easily.
Here's another top tip. Have a baby. They won't last very long then.
Right. Then anything dangerous has to go.
Yeah. You smash them up with a pram, anything like that. Why does he need four?
You could do that. You could just tip off Frank, give him 50p, tell him to break one of... No, I can't. It's bad. This is bad.
Yeah. I tell him to go around with a pair of scissors, get Natty to go around cutting the bottoms off the curtains.
Off the curtains.
Bottoms off the curtains.
Good idea. Then you're blameless. So that's I think it's a very good Text the Nation.
Yeah, man.
Keep them coming in because they could be in retro Text the Nation next week. Email adamandjoe.sixmusic@bbc.co.uk with your domestic decoration disputes.
That's it for the podcast fun. Next week there'll be another one. It's normal to feel sad, not odd, because it's the end of the podcast, except for this bit.
So, yeah, show number 11 of 2011. We got one more studio show to go.
So uptight about time.
Very uptight about time.
Man. Always counting, always trying to see what is in the future and the past. Just live for the moment.
It was show number 11, and it was on the 11th of the of 2011, of June. Which isn't nothing to do with them.
You could find a way that it was, though. If you're a conspiracy theorist, you could find a way that
exactly.
It was some mathematical
two thing. Times. June is the sixth month. 2 times 6 is 12 minus one of the ones from the 11.
Yes.
11. Weird coincidence? I don't think so. Next week is going to be show number 12, our final studio-bound show. And then after that, we're in the mighty Glastonbury for 3 weeks. Weeks of unfettered ludicrousness.
Not 3 weeks, it's 3 days.
3 days.
Thanks for listening anyway, everybody. And that's it, really.
What kind of sign-off is that?
just one that ran out of steam.
I can't believe you're sitting there with your sunglasses on. Wish you could see him, listeners. We're in a dark studio.
I had to put
BBC.
My sunglasses on because James was staring at me in a peculiar way.
They're to protect you from James's eye daggers.
They are.
It's a lot of work to do, James. But don't think it goes unappreciated because it does a lovely piff.
Wait, hang on. Whoa. Apparently, James Sterling is, it says here, Britain's best producer.
Getting a special award for quite lovely my birthday, honestly.
Say the guys at Watsits.
James.
And you are getting a Watsit.
Oh, getting a lovely golden Watsit.
You get a golden
lovely golden Watsit. Put your head down, let me put it around your neck. That's a lovely beef.
Instead of golden, you know what golden Watsits have? They have, instead of cheesy dust, they have gold dust. So they're actually very, they're one of the only awards that's actually of great value.
I've just realised the Queen is also a cousin of the mighty Boosh's Crack Fox. I think they're related.
Mm.
They're cousins.
It's all the revelations happening.
It's all weaving together. That's it, isn't it, folks? My glass of wine is empty. It's time for me to head back in the house and pretend I haven't been out in the shed alone with a glass of wine listening to my own podcast.
Nude.
Absolutely nude.
See you next week.
Take care. Love you. Bye.
Bye.
Adam and Joe. Blah, boobity, bye, yeah, bye, bye. Blah, boobity, bye, yeah, boo, blah, 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 boobity, bye, yeah, blah, 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 blah.